Tom Woods Show, episode 872.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Men, one of the goofiest sights in the world is a man wearing a suit that doesn't quite fit him right. Well, this week, my listeners can get any premium made-to-measure Indochino suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when entering Woods at checkout. Hey, everybody, talking about healthcare today. We've got this Republican plan, we've got Obamacare, we've got Rand Paul's plan, and I thought I'd talk to somebody who can explain the differences in all these different proposals to us. And that person is Dr. Jane Orient, who is Executive Director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, which you can visit at aapsonline.org. Dr. Orient has been in solo practice of general internal medicine since 1981, and she holds her MD from the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. Dr. Orient, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
When healthcare came back into the news and I realized I had to figure out what the deal is with the Paul Ryan Republican proposal and the Rand Paul proposal, I thought, all right, forget it. I'm going to get Dr. Orient on here and she's going to do all the work for us. So I looked at Rand Paul's thing this morning. It's not very long. I have not looked at the actual bill that the Republicans are proposing, but can you tell me, we'll get to later what the ideal proposal would be. Tell me if there are any merits to the proposal being pushed by the White House and Paul Ryan. What would they be?
The main thing that I think would be good is that it gets rid of the individual mandates and the employer mandates to purchase insurance. But the CBO is portraying that as sort of a bad thing because it means that people will decide not to buy coverage if you don't punish them for not doing it. And the way the media is portraying that is that people will lose coverage and they'll become uninsured. But the CBO makes it pretty plain that the reason they'll be uninsured is because they're rejecting the policies that are available to them under Obamacare. And unfortunately, the Ryan plan does not repeal all of the insurance requirements, you know, the essential benefit package and all the subsidies that go to insurance companies and all of the requirements that insurance companies have to cover people with pre-existing conditions at the same cost that they cover people with low risk. There will be a little bit of a disincentive to game the system in that your premiums will go up 30% if you are uninsured for, say, a certain period of time. I think it's 60 days. But it accepts the flawed presumption that if you have to cover your house when it's on fire, that it's still insurance.
Well, if you're also saying that it keeps in place the Obamacare requirement that every insurance policy has to cover the following 100 things or whatever it is, then wouldn't we wind up kind of back where we were with very, very high cost insurance policies, in part because the insurance is not tailored to individual needs and everybody's running around with insurance for baldness or whatever?
Well, that's right. We'll be back to where we are with Obamacare, with premiums much, much higher than people had before Obamacare. Because before Obamacare, they could buy a true insurance policy, you know, like catastrophic insurance that was priced according to risk.
What would the Ryan plan do with all the people who can't afford health insurance? I mean, what do they do about them that's not Obamacare?
Well, they will replace the big subsidies to buy insurance plans with tax credits. We'll redistribute the wealth a little bit differently, but they won't really be tax credits. They'll be refundable, advanceable tax credits. That means that you get them whether or not you owe taxes. And like with Obamacare, they will go to the insurance company, not to the individual. Now, I think if you gave people money, like if you gave them relief from the payroll taxes, which eats up 15% of people's income, no matter how poor they are, that a lot of people would choose a different use for that money besides paying outrageously priced insurance plans. They would be much better off saving the money and using it to buy medical care if they needed it.
All right, but here's the problem. In a system that you and I favor, where it's just doctors and patients and that's it. You would have much, much lower costs. We know that. We can see that in the cash-only practices. There's so much evidence of it around us. But we're not anywhere near that. And so the problem would be that even if you let people keep a little bit extra money so they can buy their own health insurance, how does that help when, you know, every operation is $35,000? I think that's what people would say.
Well, they would say that, and that they would have a very good point, but there's no excuse for the operations being that costly. And the reason they are is because of insurance. Most people have the insurance company pay the hospitals. The hospitals love that situation. The insurance companies love it too, because the more they take in premiums, the more of the money sticks to their fingers. But I think people need to begin to shop for prices, which they have no incentive whatsoever to do, as long as they're forced to pay for insurance. Now, if they went to like surgerycenterok.com, which is the website of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, they could find out the full price for operations that are elective, and they will be astonished at how good those prices are. Maybe half, maybe even a tenth as much as a so-called not-for-profit hospital would charge them.
But the funny thing about that is that almost anybody in the know is familiar with the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Now, the average person has no idea what it is, but I mean, people who follow this stuff know all about that. And the reason they know all about it is because it's so rare. Why is it so rare? They're getting all this free publicity. They're prospering like crazy. Why aren't more people emulating this model?
That is a very good question. Actually, more people are beginning to emulate the model. But if they are getting more money the way they're operating now, why shouldn't they keep milking the system? We have become so dependent on third-party payment. 90% of the $3 trillion in healthcare revenue goes through a third party. And we have a huge swamp full of people who like that situation.
So, all right, let's, before we go any further in figuring out the rights and wrongs of any proposed plans, what would be the Jane Orient plan? And I don't mean what's the plan that you think you could get through politically. Let's suppose you had a Congress full of Ron Pauls. It's just a matter of drafting the bill. What would it look like?
Well, we did do a white paper about that at aapsonline.org. But basically what it would look like is it would get the federal government out of insurance. The federal government would stop feeding subsidies to the insurance companies. They would stop forcing insurance companies to cover anything. They would stop forcing them to charge people a certain amount in order to subsidize people who were higher risk. And then the insurance would go back to the states. Some of the states have ridiculous laws like New Jersey and New York, which have the same guaranteed issue community rating that inevitably causes a death spiral. But people would begin to have choices like they used to have. I used to have a AAA policy that I think had a $25,000 deductible, but it cost about $250 a year. And I hoped never to have to use it, but they stopped offering it, saying you can't have this unless you have a basic insurance plan, which would probably cost about $10,000 a year. And if, you know, you already had that, what would you need the AAA plan for? So it's just things, the market has been driven into just totally irrational situations because of mandates at the state and the federal level. And because of this concept that people have that insurance pays for everything.
Help me figure out the pre-existing conditions question, because it seems like it's just a rhetorical slam dunk for somebody to say, oh, I see. So somebody who's got some terrible condition is just going to be left out in the cold by your so-called free market substitute. Well, look, I guess I'm not for the free market when it comes to healthcare then.
Well, I guess that's what they say, except that people are not left out in the cold. Insurance companies do frequently cover these people. If they get an association plan, they're covered. They may be covered at a higher cost, and they can get medical care if the care is available. And I mean, self-paying patients can usually get a half-decent price, and often a lower price than the people would pay if they funneled all that money through a third party.
All right, so let's get back to the what's the name of the bill that Paul Ryan is pushing?
The American Healthcare Act.
Oh, that's right. Okay, and I'm
the ACA instead of the ACA, I guess you might say.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the poll data does not look good on this, but I can't imagine many Americans have actually gone through the thing. I mean, they're just hearing that it's not fashionable to support it, and I think a lot of them just aren't supporting it. But they're also basically being told that it's going to lead to and I'm not necessarily saying it's a great bill, but I'm saying that if I were relying entirely on media reports, sure, I would probably say the same thing. I've heard it said, and we refuted this on another podcast that I do, that Obamacare has saved, you know, 36,000 lives a year and 36,000 people will be dead without it. We responded to that. But still, you know, there's a tremendous presumption that Obamacare has insured tens of millions of people. And these people would not be insured otherwise, or they might be insured if we had a free market system where it would be likely that premiums would be brought down. But the alternative, here's the problem I've got here. It seems like the alternative to Obamacare is not going to be a free market system because Americans don't want a free market in healthcare. So as soon as you move away from Obamacare, you will have a system where prices are still high. It'll be the worst of all worlds. You'll have the freedom to choose, to some degree, insurance. But on the other hand, premiums will still be sky high because of all the government involvement.
Yeah, that is kind of a problem. And how do you get out of the situation where Americans have an entitlement mentality where they want somebody else to pay for them if they're sick, but they don't want to pay their fair share if they're not sick? So we have things that force them to do that. And they have responded to this terrific sales job by the third-party payment industry, by the swamp, that they are utterly dependent on them to pay their medical bills. But, you know, the system is not sustainable. It is bankrupting. The federal government is bankrupting the state governments. We just cannot continue this way. Something bad is going to happen. And people seem to believe that Obamacare has insured more people. Well, it has gotten more people on Medicaid, that's for sure, which is terrible coverage any way you look at it. They maybe have this coverage, but the access to care is miserable. The people could have had the coverage before, many of them, they were eligible, but they didn't bother to sign up for it because it is so lousy. And maybe it returns only 20 to 40 cents worth of medical value for every dollar that's shoved into the system. So, you know, to get people dependent on a system that is terrible and that really restricts the availability of physicians and hospitals because it tries to save money by just not paying people for work, it just leads to this downward spiral in quality of medical care at the same time as the prices keep going up.
Now, let me respond. If people are, the problem is that we do have this entitlement mentality and, well, this is a big expense, so somebody else should shoulder it for me. But consider that, I don't know what the percentage is offhand, but a huge percentage of Americans, when asked, do you have a spare $500 for an emergency that might come up in your life? Most Americans would not. They would have to go ask friends. They'd have to sell something, whatever. They would not be able to come up with $500 on the spot. And yet, one emergency room visit can easily be twice that. One emergency room visit, easily. So I can understand, even somebody like me, I'm anti-welfare state, but yet I can understand people saying, in the same way they can't imagine how their kids could be educated without the government because look at, you know, it's thousands of dollars a year. Where would I ever come up with that money? Same thing here. Where would I come up with the money? One bad thing happens to me and I'm totally bankrupt forever. I'll take my chances with what crumbs Obamacare will give me because it's the best option I have.
Well, it's not the best option you have to spend $10,000 or more for an insurance plan that probably won't even cover your emergency room visit. I mean, how does that make sense? You don't have $500 for an emergency, but you do have $10,000 a year to give to a third party that may or may not pay if you have a medical need. I mean, why would you want to buy insurance, which is a product that profits from selling people something that they can't use?
All right. Then in that case, then I want to ask you your opinion on the Rand Paul proposal, and we'll do that after we thank our sponsor. Folks, in my travels, I run across a lot of men wearing suits, and a lot of the time these suits do not fit them properly, and it's embarrassing. And the thing is, they don't know they should be embarrassed. One of the key offenders is the sleeves. They don't get the sleeves right at all. The sleeves are a little bit too long, but they don't realize that. But I'm telling you, a lot of people do realize it. And it makes you look silly. It makes you look not serious. But it's way beyond just the sleeves. The overall fit of the suit is what really impresses people. That's how people know you're wearing an impressive suit, is that it fits you well. Well, now you can have a made-to-measure suit without breaking the bank. This week, my listeners can grab a premium Indochino suit made to measure for just $389 at Indochino.com when you type in Woods at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit with free shipping. This is an unbelievable deal for a suit that's going to fit you better than anything off the rack ever could. And no one's going to be secretly snickering at you. They're going to be secretly envious. And isn't that really the position you'd like to be in? So check it out, Indochino.com, and use promo code Woods at checkout. So Senator Rand Paul has released his own Obamacare replacement bill. In fact, I think it's called something kind of like that, Obamacare Replacement Act or something. And he's been involved in very high-profile debates and shouting matches with different people, including Paul Ryan himself and to some degree even the president. What's your impression of Rand? Do you think people should get on board with him?
I think his plan is much, much better than the Ryan plan. For one thing, it allows people to form associations to offer group insurance. And group insurance usually does have guaranteed issue, but it is much less expensive because getting insurance is not the only reason for joining the group. And we used to have this kind of thing. You know, people used to have through their fraternal organization, through their lodge, a kind of health insurance plan. But right now, the only associations that work are employer-paid and employer-owned insurance policies. So if people don't get insurance through their job, then they're stuck in the individual market where prices are generally much higher. And they are much more strictly underwritten for pre-existing conditions. So why we haven't had association plans for a long, long time is a good political question because it would benefit so many people. Right now, if you have an employer-provided plan, you get it with pre-tax dollars, which means it probably costs most people half as much as it would cost if they had to buy it with after-tax dollars, which is just a huge inequity. It's hugely unfair. And Rand Paul's bill would mitigate that problem. And I think also he does not fall into the myth or the lie that a refundable tax credit is really a tax credit. It is really a subsidy.
There's a good amount of discussion in his bill about health savings accounts and liberating those and removing restrictions on them. Can you just explain in layman's terms what a health savings account is? And do you favor these as a kind of an interim measure? I mean, maybe you don't in the long run want something like this, but is it better than what we have now?
Well, we do have health savings accounts to some extent, and they were supposed to really change the marketplace when they were loaded onto the Medicare Part D, which is the only reason Medicare Part D passed. But they were immediately crippled with all of these restrictions on what you could do for them, and the managed care industry didn't really like the idea that you could pay out of pocket. They wanted to have control over the money, so they kind of got involved in the whole deal. The idea of a health savings account is to end tax discrimination against individually paid medical bills, as opposed to medical bills funneled through the employer-owned third party. In other words, funneled through the swamp, which diverts probably at least half of the revenue that goes into it. So they were kind of a good idea. I mean, the reason we have them is because of the destructive idea of treating employer-owned insurance different from everything else. But that's how they are, and they were a good interim measure.
Is there anything in the Rand Paul plan dealing with Medicaid, which I barely ever hear a kind word for, but yet anybody who wants to tamper with it or do anything with it is the devil.
Right. You know, I don't recall exactly. I think the right thing to do is to have like more Medicaid block grants, which reduces the incentive and the ability of states to game the system with like fake provider taxes that are really just a way of getting more money to the providers who supposedly pay the taxes because it forces the federal government to shovel more money into the state budget. You know, the state budgets are really strained, and instead of trying to reform the system to be more reasonable, what they do is they just try to bring in more and more tax money from other people's states.
I follow Paul Krugman very closely because I have a podcast where we refute his column every week, and he has just been going berserk about the problems with the Paul Ryan plan. I don't think he's said anything about Rand Paul, but he's going berserk about this. He's saying this is what we've been waiting for, this ridiculous thing. And I wonder if maybe in this case, at least for the wrong reasons, maybe he's right. Can you, because we touched on this a little bit, but give me the 2 or 3 minute version of why you and your organization would say this is bad, that on net, this is not a good proposal.
It accepts the economic falsehoods that covering pre-existings is the same as insurance. It accepts the falsehood that insurance is the only way to pay for most medical care. Its good point is that it does away with the mandates, and that will help to allow a free market to develop if you remove the regulations and other barriers that prevent that from happening. We have got to return the control of money and decision-making power to patients and away from the third party. And if it makes a tiny incremental step in that direction, maybe it's a good thing. But I'm afraid that it's not going to do enough, and it will just mean the Republicans will get blamed for the continued increase in insurance premiums.
During the presidential debates, the one theme regarding healthcare that Trump kept coming back to was competition between the states, that so that you could have a health insurance provider that was provide insurance across state lines, and this would open up competition nationally. Does this new bill provide for that?
It does not. It has nothing to do with buying insurance across state lines. Actually, I don't know how great an impact that idea would have. It could be done now if the states would permit it. You don't have to have the federal government to allow it, except maybe to force the states to do it. The problem people would like to avoid with a cross-state purchase is these state mandates. You know, the lobbyists make the insurance plan pay for things that people would ordinarily not be willing to pay for, especially if they saw how much it increased their premium. And so it would be a way of getting around these state mandates. But I don't know whether the powers that be would allow that to happen, which means that I don't know how much impact it could have.
Now, I'll grant that there are certain historical events that have led to, in the American case, this overwhelming emphasis on third-party payment in healthcare, and that there are different factors at work here, like the tax code that makes it, as you said, preferable to, because you're dealing in pre-tax dollars, to take some of your money from your job and have it go to healthcare. So it's not like the current system has evolved entirely spontaneously and according to individual preference. We've gotten there circuitously. But at the same time, there's a part of me that can't get away from this basic thing, which is that by and large, people, I think, couldn't you argue that in general, to some degree, this third party system did arise voluntarily? I mean, a lot of times when I see there's something wrong with the economy, it's always some government intervention and we get rid of it, it solves the problem. But here it's not so clear. I mean, yeah, the government may have encouraged this to some degree, but surely the small tax incentives can't be responsible for this gigantic insurance infrastructure all over the place. So aren't we criticizing people's individual choices aren't we criticizing to some degree the free market? Because the free market gave us, at least to some extent, the current insurance system.
I think that we can't exempt people from individual responsibility for this, that there's larceny in the human soul. And if people can get money by stealing instead of by working, they will. And it's really seductive to say that we can make your neighbor pay for your medical care. And I think that people have liked that. But I think they've been sold a bill of goods by the insurance company. Certainly government incentives will have played a huge part in it, especially with this exemption from the payroll tax, which is the only big tax that most people pay, the most low-income workers pay.
Have you seen an increase in the – I'm trying to do this from memory here. I should have it right in front of me. But it's the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons?
Yes.
I always get the first two A's, I mix them up.
But. Oh, yeah, a lot of people do. But
okay, all right.
It's association, and the website is aapsonline.org.
Okay.
And we have outlined, you know, the bad incentives that are in the system. The model is not just Obamacare. It began Well, it really took off with Medicare, but it was there with employer-provided insurance before then. It really is a fallacy to think that insurance is the solution to this problem. I mean, some people will say that health risks are simply not an insurable risk. Maybe catastrophes are. The legitimate ways of paying for medical care are cash, catastrophic insurance, and charity. And, you know, people need help, and we should help them. But allowing the government to rob people is not the same thing.
I want to ask you a question about your organization first, and then we'll get back to this. Have you seen an increase in, I mean, to some degree, there's got to be demoralization across the profession in general. And no doubt there is anecdotal evidence of early retirement and people just saying to heck with this and other people not going into medicine to begin with. So there's that working against you. But at the same time, for people who are staying in the system to fight, are you seeing your numbers go up? Are you seeing more interest in what you're doing? Is there any good trend?
I think that more and more doctors are going into this direct pay model, or even surgeons are opening surgery clinics that that offer reasonable pay, reasonable prices for uninsured patients and are not dependent on this. More companies are becoming self-insured, and they are, like in Oklahoma, some employers are even paying full freight if the patients have their surgery at a place like the Surgery Center of Oklahoma that offers a reasonable price. So people are beginning to understand this, but maybe half the doctors, and even more than that in some specialties, are said to suffer from burnout. The rate of suicides among physicians is very high, and the rate of them just giving up independent practice and becoming wage slaves, employees who just do whatever the employer, namely usually the hospital, wants. It's just, I mean, the number of doctors in independent practice has just plummeted.
Now, forgive me for beating a dead horse, but I want to wrap up with this just because it is, I know a lot of people who are out there having these debates with friends and family, and they're just getting killed out there. Because if they come back and say, well, charity will solve this problem, people will say, oh, I see. So you have cancer, and there's going to be some cancer ward that's going to be operated with charity money that's going to be able to, there's just no way. Whereas at least with the government can just take people's money and put it to this cause. And yeah, you can argue with me that that's immoral, but I think it's immoral to let somebody die avoidably of some horrible disease.
Well, you're assuming that the insurance company is going to pay for that cancer treatment, and a lot of times it doesn't. It denies access to the best treatment. It refuses to pay for it. The way the government regulations are, the drugs are outrageously expensive, and there is no true free market competition. And oftentimes, these very expensive drugs are extremely toxic and very limited effectiveness. So you have to wonder, are people dying faster when they get the most expensive treatment than they would have if they just didn't get treatment?
So aapsonline.org is the website. And is it just for physicians, or can the average layman read the sorts of things you guys put out and benefit from it?
Oh, we try to make things that are understandable to the layman, and they can sign up at aapsonline.org/join to get our free email alerts and the other things we put on, including our op-ed pieces or press releases. So I certainly do encourage people to look there. There's a patient tab that has a list of cash-friendly practices if they want to go outside the third-party system, which they may have to because it's so much cheaper to use your own money than it is even to go through your insurance, and the insurance may deny payment for whatever you have.
That is an interesting point. That's I think, is reason enough to check out aapsonline.org. I'm also going to link to that, this being episode 872, at tomwoods.com/872. And Dr. Orion, thanks so much for your time. I was not going to be able to figure this out. So I recruited you for this task.
Well, I hope that it was helpful. It is hard to figure out. I mean, the bill is practically impossible to read.
And yet it's hard to think that's entirely an accident after all these years, right?
Yeah, really.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, before we wrap up for today, an interesting statistic, to me anyway, I discovered over the weekend that it turns out that I've helped nearly 1,200 listeners start their own websites or blogs through the free tutorials that I give away or the free publicity that I give people when I mention their websites on my show. Not everybody has asked for the free publicity. Some people just want the tutorials or whatever. I have a whole bunch of really helpful goodies for people who use my link when they get their web hosting. But I didn't realize the number was nearly 1,200, so that is really neat to me. And in fact, I've got another site to tell you about today. If you use my link, I give you free publicity on the show. That's the way it works. So today's site is called prodigalcatholic.com, and it is a site mainly about a book, and it's called Found Prodigal Catholic, and it's more or less for people who were raised Catholic and then fell away but are kind of curious. It answers a lot of questions. There's a blog on the site that deals with a lot of current events inside and outside the church. So it's worth checking out if you're interested in the church, and that is prodigalcatholic.com, linked on today's show notes page, tomwoods.com/872, as the listener website mentioned. You can get all these free goodies that I give away to people who use my link by checking out tomwoods.com/publicity. That's where you will find the link to get hosting through me. tomwoods.com/blue is that link, but that's, you'll see that at tomwoods.com/publicity. But when you go to my link, you'll see there's a, you know, there's my face there. You can't mistake it. That's definitely my link to get your hosting. So tomwoods.com/publicity is how to get started with that. And that is it for today. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.